Your car will go from 0 to 60 in just a few seconds. The top number on your speedometer is 120. And you imagine yourself in one of those car commercials where your car is speeding along past the beautiful scenery at top speed and handling like a sports car. However, this morning you're on the freeway, and it's taken you an hour to drive that 10 miles between your house and the interstate bridge. The guy in the traffic helicopter doing the radio report seems to be mocking you as he explains about the overturned semi in the southbound lane. Wouldn't you rather take an alternate route if you weren't stuck in traffic? And of course, the northbound lane is tied up because people are stopping to look at the wreck in the southbound lane. Finally, you do get to work, and you pull into the parking lot, and lo and behold, your reserved parking space has someone else's car in it. It's a little bit like that if you need to park in a handicapped spot. Let's make a New Year's resolution not to park in the handicapped spots unless you yourself need them. Sounds of Awareness is an interview program discussing topics of interest to people with disabilities and the community at large. I'm Paul Van Dyke. Welcome to Sounds of Awareness. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Sounds of Awareness. I'm Paul Van Dyke. Lonnie Deauville is in the Guinness Book of World Records as being the longest living quadriplegic. But Lonnie is a very successful person. She lives in Florida, believe it or not. Nice
place. Which is right now probably as cold as Oregon.
You're kidding.
We are having the coldest weather in Florida history.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, here in Central Florida, last night, it was in the teens.
Well, that'll freeze your navel oranges, won't it?
Oh, boy, I'll tell you.
Oh, my goodness. Well, good morning, Lonnie, and welcome to Sounds of Awareness.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
We're doing just great up here. We've got, our typical Oregon, Washington weather here, gray and rainy and all of that good stuff. Lonnie, tell us a little bit about yourself. You had an accident about 50 years ago that rendered you a quadriplegic. What happened?
Well, when I was 14, in order for my mother to consent to buy me a horse, I won the Florida State Diving Championship. It's kind of a weird story.
Mm.
But she told me if I got to be Florida State champion diver, which she didn't think would ever happen, that she would buy me a horse, which I wanted more than anything on the planet. So I'm a very determined person, and if I set myself a goal, it's very hard to stop me from getting there. And so 6 months later, I won the Florida State Diving Championship, and my mother bought me a horse. And then when I was 17, I was out with a bunch of friends in Jacksonville, which is north of Daytona Beach, which has a nice wide beach, and I was not used to water coming up to the seawall, and it was a very hot day. We were visiting friends in Jacksonville, and everybody said, why don't we go swimming? And I thought that was a good idea. So somebody dove off the seawall, and being a show-off 17-year-old, I did a perfect 10 dive off the seawall and hit the bottom and broke my fourth, fifth, and sixth cervical vertebrae.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Oh.
And became a quadriplegic. Now, you say that it had to be a terrific shock. I was a huge athlete. You know, I held all of the athletic records in my school. You know, I was a real, what they would call nowadays, a jock. And all of a sudden, I became paralyzed from the neck down. And back in the 50s, if you broke your neck, you died. And that's why probably I'm in the Guinness Book of Records, because most people who have been a quadriplegic, and actually it's now 52 and a half years that I've been a quadriplegic, back in the 50s, if you broke your neck, you died. So it's very hard to find somebody who's been a quadriplegic as long as I. Apparently you can't find any or many. And I never expected to be in the Guinness Book of Records for being a quadriplegic. When I was a teenager once, I was going to water ski from Key West to Cuba and get in the Guinness Book of Records.
Oh.
Until the fellow that was going to pull me on the boat told me that a shark or a barracuda might think I was being trolled as bait.
Oh, jeez.
So that quickly changed my mind. I was in bed for over a year, flat on my back. And back in those days, they didn't have televisions in hospital rooms. And my roommate was a 90-year-old lady who was in a coma. So it was kind of like stimulus deprivation for a year. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think that in itself would have probably killed me. Oh, so you had no books or no people to read to you, or what did you think about all day? I mean, what?
Well, I did a lot of thinking, and I did a lot of imagining, and I had a wonderful doctor. Originally, they were just going to leave me in traction and not repair my broken neck and just kind of wait for me to die. And I had a lot of orderlies that used to come and flirt with me. And so I was talking with them one day, and I said, listen, if I've got a broken neck, it seems to me I need to get an orthopedic surgeon to try to put the neck back together so I can at least sit up in a wheelchair. And they said, yes, that would be a good idea. So I asked them to recommend a couple of doctors, and then I picked the doctor that I thought would do the best job and called him in for a consultation. And we did surgery the next day and repaired. I had the fifth vertebra, which was the middle one that got broken, kind of shattered because it got caught, you know, between the two. And so he picked out all the broken bone and took some bone from my hip and made me a new vertebra. And up until then, I had had no movement at all. And then I started being able, a couple of weeks later, to move my left arm a little bit. And to make a very long story short, my doctor, this wonderful doctor, talked the Florida Office of Vocational Rehabilitation into picking me up as their first quadriplegic client. And they sent me, after I had been in the hospital a little over a year, they sent me to the Rusk Institute in New York, which was the only place at that time in the 50s that rehabilitated quadriplegics. And Roy Campanella, who was a famous Brooklyn Dodger catcher, had broken his neck in a diving or in an automobile accident, and he was rehabilitated there. So they picked me up as a client and sent me to this rehabilitation center in New York. And you know, I learned to push a wheelchair, and you know, I was lifting weights and doing all sorts of things that I hadn't done in over a year. And now I work out twice a week with a trainer, lifting weights. I've been doing it for the last 20 years. And, you know, I'm 70. People tell me I look dramatically younger than that. I feel dramatic. I don't know what you're supposed to feel like when you're 70, but I feel really good. A lot of energy. I drive. I'm out. I run a business. You know, life is good.
Wow. Lonnie Deauville is our guest this morning on Sounds of Awareness, and she is the longest living quadriplegic, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. And she's just told us about how she had surgery back in the 50s, and kind of scary because now, you know, nowadays we have 50 some years after your accident, or 60 years after that accident, we've got rehab and sports medicine and spinal injury things. So you were really sort of a pioneer in that field. And now, when you broke your neck, were you a little bit like Christopher Reeves? Did you have to have a respirator and that kind of thing? Because he didn't really live all that long as a quadriplegic.
No, he didn't. And they wanted to put me on a respirator. Actually, back in the 50s, they used hearses as ambulances. And when they picked me up, I was having so much trouble breathing that they stopped at a clinic on the beach. And the doctor came in and looked at me, thought I was unconscious, and he said, well, she's broken her neck, she's not going to make it, but you may as well try to get her to the hospital. Well, that was like, to this day, I'm thankful for the doctor for saying that. because it was kind of like giving me a shot of adrenaline in the heart. You know, I thought, who do you think he is telling me I'm going to die? So it just made me mad. Which was a good thing.
Yeah. Now, some people would have said, that guy has no bedside manner. He's a jackass.
No, he didn't have any bedside manner. But, you know, by saying that, and of course he wouldn't have said that if he knew that I was conscious. But I was having a lot of trouble breathing. So when I got to the emergency room, I came to long enough to tell them that I was breathing on my own, and if I could breathe on my own, I didn't want them. They didn't have respirators back then. They had iron lungs. And I told them I didn't want to be put into an iron lung, that I would breathe on my own and make it. So, you know, they didn't put me in an iron lung. You can see I'm a very stubborn person.
Well, I guess so. Hey, by the way, for my younger listeners, an iron lung is a giant kind of a tubular thing that they would put you in, and it would exert positive pressure. Or is it a positive or negative pressure? I don't remember. On a person's chest. But you had to lie in this tube-like thing with a sort of a gasket thing around your neck. And
your head was in it.
Your head was in it, too?
Well, I think there... See, I never got in one. But I guess your head would have to be out because they'd have to feed you, unless they fed you intravenously. But I just knew that I had breathed so far long enough to have the ambulance come and get me to the hospital. And so, you know, I knew that I could breathe on my own enough to stay alive. And I didn't want to be in an iron lung because I figured that would make my breathing even worse. Because if I was using whatever it took to breathe that long, I didn't want to do anything artificial to make my breathing less effective.
Oh, that's right. And then your breathing muscles might atrophy or something, and that would not be real.
Yeah, well, even today, your lung muscles are called your intercostal muscles, and mine are still paralyzed. And I know right now you're wondering, well, how can she be so incredibly long-winded if her lungs are paralyzed?
I wasn't going to say that.
Well, the truth is that I have learned to breathe diaphragmatically. I breathe with my diaphragm. And that's how famous singers
I was just going to say.
Yeah. So, you know, I've trained my diaphragm quite well. I do a lot of public speaking, and nobody knows that my lungs are paralyzed.
Now, that is in itself to me incredible. It's just, you did say you had a career doing radio announcing, though, for a while before your accident.
Yeah, that was before my accident.
Yeah. We're speaking this morning with Lonnie Dovell, who is, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, the longest living quadriplegic. And we're discussing her life and her problems right after her accident, her diving accident, better than 50 years ago. And the medical treatment was pretty premature back then, and not like it is today. So she is, because of her determination, she is lucky to be alive and with us today on Sounds of Awareness. I'm Paul Van Dyke. Lonnie, you were involved later on in some business in helping craft the ADA legislation. But before we get into that, the other question I wanted to ask you. Now, you mentioned that you do some workouts. You do some weightlifting and that kind of thing, and I was curious to know who provides assistance for you and what sort of tools you use to manipulate things. You know, like you mentioned, you drive. Do you have a special hand controls or some sort of thing on your car? All that. Tell us about all of that.
Yes, I drive from my wheelchair. I have a power chair, and I have a ramp van, and I have no driver's seat. I drive right under the wheel. I have a special lock-in mechanism that locks in my wheelchair. I drive into the seat belt, and I have hand controls and a special steering mechanism. And I'm proud to say that I have been driving for 50 years, probably over 50 years now, from a wheelchair, and I have never put a scratch on a vehicle. And my son tells me that I parallel park better than anyone that he's ever met.
That's
kind of an honor to hear that from your son.
Well, yeah. Did you have your son after you were paralyzed? I imagine.
Yes.
That was.
He was born when I was 46.
Wow. And
I was early starting and late finishing.
How did you manage to handle care of a baby?
Well, fortunately, he was a large baby. He was a little bit late, so he was incredibly strong when he was born. And I kind of pick him up like a mama gorilla picks up her baby. But baby gorillas, you don't have to hold their heads like you do a newborn. But Ryan was born so big and strong that you didn't have to hold his head. As a matter of fact, we got him home from the hospital and put him in a cradle that somebody had loaned to us. The first thing he did was kind of do a push-up and look around the room. And I said to my husband, "Oh, good grief, Jude, we need to take him out of there and put him in his crib with the side up. He's going to crawl out." So he was a very strong baby. He was even helping me change his diapers when he was 9 months old. Started walking when he was 7 months old.
Wow. You know, you read or hear about cases where a disabled person or a disabled family has a child, and the first thing that Family Services wants to do is to take that child away because they feel that a person with a disability can't possibly take care of a baby. Now, I know people can, but I ask the question mainly for the benefit of my audience, who's probably going, how did she do that? And did you run into any problems with the state or the authorities?
No, not at all. Fortunately, I told you that I had been picked up after my accident as a client for vocational rehabilitation.
Uh-huh.
20 years later, I was the director of that agency in Florida. So I would have been the last person that the state would have said was incapable of taking care of a child.
Got ya.
And I made a lot of changes to the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation to make it more client-friendly.
What way, for example?
Well, the federal legislation that was in place at that time for vocational rehabilitation said that you had to rehabilitate the most severely disabled first, which makes sense, because someone with not so difficult a disability can find a job usually. But if you have a very complicated disability, it's harder to find a job. So what the state of Florida and many other states at that time were doing, they were rehabilitating people with hernias, hysterectomies, and hemorrhoids. You know, and of course, those people can find a job. But people that were deaf or paraplegic or quadriplegic or severely retarded, you know, those people with very, very disabling disabilities were not generally picked up by vocational rehabilitation.
Because they just figured, what's the point?
Right.
Well, and now so, people who are severely retarded, they put them in government, but never mind. Bad joke.
That was brilliant. Good for you.
Anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt your
No, that was a wonderful thought. Interruption. and I second it.
But you made some changes and started accepting people with huge disabilities.
Yes, we started following the federal law, which says that you have to rehabilitate the most severely disabled first, and then if there's any money left over, then you can rehabilitate the people with the less severe disabilities. And it made a huge change because it made people with more disabilities, more serious disabilities, far more employable. And, as a quadriplegic, I have never had difficulty finding a job, ever. I'm trained as a clinical psychologist. I worked as a clinical psychologist. I taught college. I worked as a rehabilitation psychologist, which is what got me into running the state vocational rehabilitation agency. And now I sell a superfood that makes people healthy.
Super. And we'll talk about the Greens Plus here in a second, but tell us in kind of the time that we're running down on the clock here, and Lonnie Doval, tell us a little bit about how you impacted ADA legislation, because there were a number of people that worked on that, and you had a lot to do with it.
Right. I helped to write the legislation for disabled people, and actually it was the whole Civil Rights Act, and the disability, the accessibility was written into that. And I helped to write all of the accessibility legislation for the state of Florida. And, you know, it's been a great pleasure to me, because I remember right after I got home from the rehabilitation center, I was at the movies with my mother, and the movie manager came up to me and said, "I'm sorry, you'll have to leave." And I said, "I beg your pardon." And he said, "Your wheelchair is blocking the exit." And I said, "Trust me, if there's a fire, I'll be the first one out." And he said, "No, you'll have to leave." And I said, "I tell you what, you call the police, and they will take me out of here kicking and screaming. And if it takes the rest of my life, I will sit in front of your movie theater with a sign saying, please do not give this movie theater your business. They discriminate against people with disabilities. And I will talk everybody that I see walking into here into going to another movie theater." And so they never called the police.
Good.
And I saw the movie. But it made me realize, see, back in the 50s, things were not accessible. And I used to go out with my friends and have to be carried in and out of places. And I thought, you know, well, I'm fortunate. I'm young, and I've got young friends, and I've got good friends that take me places. But what about people with disabilities, people that have to use wheelchairs, people that are blind or deaf? You know, how do they get places? How do they function? And so it made me very interested in accessibility of all sorts for people with disabilities.
And, you know, sadly, Lonnie, even 20 or so years after the ADA, there are still places that are not totally accessible. We're really kind of behind the times with the ADA. It's a good law, and it's great legislation, but it's still, there's a lot of work that has to be done.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing that really gripes me is people that don't have a disability that park in the handicapped parking places. It makes me absolutely livid. I've seen people get out of a vehicle that's parked in a handicapped parking place and walk into, like, the mall. And so I follow them, and I say, "Excuse me, would you mind telling me what your disability is?" "Oh, I have a heart problem." "Oh, I see. And because of that, your doctor has given you a handicapped parking permit?" "Yes." "Well, what are you doing at the mall?" "Well, the doctor wants me to walk a mile a day."
Uh-huh. So they park in the handicapped spot.
So they park in the handicapped parking to go in and walk up and down the mall until they've walked an hour. And then they come out and get in their vehicle in the handicapped parking place and go home.
Oh, God. Don't you feel like ice-picking their tires or something?
Oh, I do. As a matter of fact, I used to put 10-penny nails under people's tires when I was in graduate school.
We won't tell.
No, don't tell anybody.
God. Oh, Lordy.
I had very good friends that were my cohorts in that.
Yeah, yeah, share the blame, sure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I can't blame you. I can't say that I blame you. Lonnie Doval, who is the longest living quadriplegic and putting 10-penny nails under people's tires who park in the handicapped spots.
And that
was many years
ago. The statute of limitations has passed.
Yes, and you wonder how she's lived this long now, you see. God. Oh, man, oh, man. Wow. Well, we're running down toward the end of the time here. And I just wanted to sort of mention, you are, in the few minutes that we have left, you are involved in a business. You sell Greens Plus, Can you tell us just a little bit about that as we wrap up the program?
Yes, Greens Plus. I actually attribute my longevity to Greens Plus. After I retired from working for the state, I started taking Greens Plus, which is a superfood. It's a supplement, and it has reduced my age, if you can say such a thing. I am dramatically healthier. We've been producing it and selling it for about 20 years, and we started selling it because it had done such an incredible thing for my health. And I find that everybody that takes it, it does wonderful things for their health.
And for people who are listening to this in Portland, in the Portland area, you said this Greens Plus is actually made in where?
It's formulated and bottled in McMinnville, Oregon.
How about that? So you can buy local. Now, I don't want to turn this into an infomercial, but just simply to say that Lonnie, who is a quadriplegic, is involved in this as a very successful business person. And it sounds like to me, whether you had been a quadriplegic or not, that you are the kind of person who has the drive and the intellect to succeed at just about damn near anything you put your hand to.
Well, you know, Paul, I was a high school dropout and got my GED, went to 4 years of college and 4 years of graduate school, and became a clinical psychologist. You know, so I believe that if you set your mind to something, you can do just about anything. You know, failure is not falling down. Failure is refusing to try to get up again.
There we go. And I think that is a great line to end the show, because our time is up. And we always get really into some good stuff, and then the clock says, meep. So, Lonnie Duvall, who is the longest living quadriplegic, according to the Guinness Book of Records, and you can understand why after listening to her. Lonnie, thank you so much for sharing with us.
I have enjoyed it, Paul. Thank you so much.
This has been Sounds of Awareness. For more information about our program and guests, please visit kboo.fm/soundsofawareness. Our screen reader-friendly website is publicradio113.weebly.com. There you can find downloads of previous shows, contact information, and editorials on various disability-related topics. Sounds of Awareness is independently produced by Paul and April Van Dyke for KBOO-FM, Portland, Oregon, USA.